Alexa, stop talking.
Who's that?
Oh, nothing. Nothing. Just the thing that listens to us when we talk.
I know, right? If Nixon and Kissinger lived in the modern era, we'd have even more recordings of like...
Nixon would be like, Alexa, record this conversation. It's a terrible Nixon impression. Shit.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Here we go.
All right.
Welcome to the Bowie Book Club. I'm Christiane.
And I'm Greg.
And we've had a book club for over a decade.
Apparently not going back as far as the Nixon administration, but a while now.
Not quite that far. And we read a lot of books, and sometimes we talked about them.
Mostly we just got drunk and gossiped.
But at the sad loss of David Bowie in 2016, we decided to get our act together and read through his list of 100 most influential books in no particular order.
In fact, in a completely nonsensical order.
And make wild speculations as we go.
The nonsensical order is what got us here today.
Yes. So the random number generator of...
our minds.
Pubomancy.
Yep.
Or baromancy. Have we ever copyrighted this?
Both of them.
Okay.
Yeah, both patent pending.
Gave us Christopher Hitchens' The Trial of Henry Kissinger.
And we're coming out of the gate basically telling you how enjoyable the book was. But there's more to it than that. There's stuff that we can talk about, I think.
Yeah, it was... So let's say what's kind of unique about this book is that... most of the stuff that we know about Henry Kissinger's, you know, political persona and actions were from like the 60s and
this, yeah, 70s. The 60s and 70s, yeah.
But this book wasn't published until 2001.
Right, yeah, yeah. So at the point where, and I think this is what drove the Hitchens to write this book, is where at the point where Henry Kissinger was an elder statesman, the sort of avuncular figure that was on the news shows as Dr. Kissinger, he would show up in, you know, different cultural things. I think he was in a Woody Allen movie.
Yeah. And he was just, it's like he'd kept clean while everyone else had,
from the Nixon administration. Yeah. Had gotten dirt on them. And
the Nixon administration, meaning like all the stuff that led to his impeachment and removal from office.
Right, which is basically a little bit before my time, or at least where...
it's far, far, far before my time.
I was hoping you wouldn't say that. I was a mere infant at the time. I was not in my teens or anything.
Yeah, I feel the hardest part of the book is that Christopher Hitchens dislikes Henry Kissinger, and he feels that he should not have had this clean reputation. And so he's going through kind of point by point.
In a very legalistic way.
Yeah, like here's a memo and here's a recorded conversation and here's, you know, like very in-depth detailed thing. Detailed accounts of what Henry Kissinger did or what things he was involved with that Hitchens insists makes him the perpetrator of crimes, international crimes.
And I think what makes it difficult is that we have this picture of Kissinger and we have this picture of Nixon that are very distant now.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of context in the book. It assumes that you're sharing, you know, Hitchens' sort of sense of the backstory. So the things that he describes as being really heinous sort of stuff, while you get the sort of emotional impact of them, the sort of legal arguments don't land as well because you don't have the backstory of like, well, you know, what was going on around this or like...
or even if you have the backstory, like I feel like I have some backstory. I have,
you know,
a history perception of things, but I don't have a personal experiential perception. I wasn't alive during the Vietnam War or during the was it Cyprus?
Right. Which I think was underreported.
Or the East Timor.
Which I do remember hearing about, and then that kind of drifting out of the news like everything does.
Yeah, and that's part of it, isn't it?
That yeah.
It drifted out of the news, that people didn't pay attention.
And I think part of what prompted this book was the sense of like, it's unfair that Kissinger gets to kind of wait out the clock and, you know, new
he's
atrocities.
Still waiting. He's
yeah,
still alive.
He's still doing it.
So let's give a little...
Yeah, maybe we should get into the backstory a little bit ourselves.
So let's do bio of the character, Kissinger. He was born in Bavaria in 1923. At age 15, he moved to New York City. He did basic training at Camp Croft in Spartanburg. Hey, narrativism, I was just in Spartanburg.
Are you Henry Kissinger?
I was not doing basic training.
Oh, okay.
He worked counterintelligence in the war. That's World War II. That war.
I was not alive during that war. Let me just make that clear.
Me neither. But, you know, so he spoke German, so he was desirable as a counterintelligence agent. He was Harvard educated from BA through PhD, and he even became faculty there. Apparently his political career started because he was the, he wanted to be advisor to Nelson Rockefeller during, and so he was like in his presidential campaigns, which apparently there were many. I didn't know he tried to run for president.
And he was much more, he was pretty moderate, right? Like if
I didn't meet the man.
I've never had conversations with him personally.
He ended up instead being the national security advisor and then secretary of state for Nixon. And then when Nixon was removed for Ford.
So like a super powerful person.
Yeah.
In this sort of dual role.
Powerful and like the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
Behind the curtain.
Yep. Yep.
He is the Wizard of Oz.
He's a very short man. Mm-hmm. Enjoys hiding behind drapery.
And has a shade of green.
He has a sort of greenish tint to him. I think that's speculation.
Maybe
he might
that was
sue us for libel.
Those are the glasses that we wear, right? Wasn't that the whole Wizard of Oz thing?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Anyway, he got the Nobel Peace Prize.
What?
Yeah. So
he didn't know that. That's crazy.
That was part of what was weird or infuriating for Hitchens is that he got the Nobel Peace Prize in 1973 for the ceasefire, which ended up failing. And rumor has it he tried to give the prize back, but wasn't allowed to or something. But yeah, so he has Nobel Peace Prize.
Wow.
Yeah.
As someone who, from reading this book and from reading anything about Kissinger, like the Peace Prize is not the award that you would think would be in his sort of wheelhouse.
Right. And maybe that's what drives Hitchens to write this book, because as we are further away, we have sort of a hearsay relationship. We don't have a personal memory of his work. And so if we just look him up and see, oh, this guy, he got the Nobel Peace Prize. He must be cool.
These dry sort of facts.
So Hitchens is like, no, war criminal.
Right. Yeah. He did these really terrible things. So this sort of avuncular image of this elder statesman who understands how the country works and got the United States through this war and has the Nobel Peace Prize is just the falseness of it, I think, is what really is driving him. And it makes sense, you know, the other books that Hitchens wrote around this time were the similar sort of like, you know, he wrote one about Clinton called No One Left to Lie To, which is a very similar, like, the public persona is this, but here's what's going on underneath it. And then a similar book about Mother Teresa of all people.
That one was called Missionary Positions.
I can't believe I just made that noise in the same
sentence. About
Mother Teresa. I was raised a Catholic, and that either explains it or...
It totally explains it.
I'm going to hell. Either way, that's very clear.
So tell me about Hitchens.
So he described himself as a democratic socialist a Marxist and an anti-totalitarian.
And also an anti-theist.
Yes, very he much
didn't
anti-theist.
Like religion.
Right. But he wasn't really part of the political left. He kind of broke with them in the 90s around Clinton and around the run-up to the Iraq War.
Mostly where, saying they weren't doing enough, right?
Yeah, yep. And so he ended up kind of, I mean, the
Wasn't
way,
it about the Salman Rushdie thing?
And also part of it was too, right, yeah. where he didn't feel there was a strong enough response from the left about the fatwa. I'm sure I'm pronouncing that wrong.
So author Salman Rushdie had been, he is under threat of death from Iran because of a book he wrote.
Right, the Satanic Verses, yeah. Which, again, is another thing that's sort of been covered up by other layers of sort of news. What was a huge deal at the time. And Hitchens thought that there wasn't enough of a strong response from the left about this is wrong. Like, authors should not be subjected to these kind of things. So he ended up being a sort of, at least the way that I have encountered him in the past couple decades was as a sort of a mosquito that just sort of like annoyed everybody.
Yeah, it's... you always wonder, like, was it controversy for controversy's sake, or was he truly driven by these principles that he felt were overlooked? And
I guess one thing I did get out of this book was getting a better sense of him, and actually, like, a better sense of his principles. Like, I think, you know, this idea of him being the gadfly, I think there's more under it than that. Like, a real belief and a real sort of, it's not controversy for controversy's sake. Like, he really, there's a real depth to.
Yeah, he was apparently super intelligent.
Like, oh, yeah, yeah.
That, brilliant guy.
Right.
And he did die of cancer.
Like, really young. Or,
yeah.
Or, well, yeah, into early middle age, I guess.
And it was when, hold on, I wrote it down. 2011, so kind of recently. And he wrote a lot about death and his experience at the end of his life. And that's one connection. I mean, he's a Brit who moved to the United States and died of cancer. And so there's some Bowie similarities there in some way.
Yeah, and I think one thing I did get out of this book, even though it was difficult, it was a difficult read, I wouldn't mind reading more Hitchens.
And, it was difficult, you know, because it was dry.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't a topic that I had like an automatic entry into, or like an easy entry into, and it was dry. But it, you know, the other stuff that I've read about him or by him, you know, trying to prep for this makes me think like I want to read his biography or autobiography, Hitch 22.
Oh, Hitch, yeah.
Yeah, or his writings about death.
Because Hitch 22, get it?
Yeah. Okay, maybe I don't want to read that just for the title.
Catch 22, that's the Joseph Heller book.
Yeah, I'll link to that. as a person who was not alive during World War II.
We've established.
Yeah, just want to make that clear. I'm not that old.
But the dryness or the difficulty getting into it is because I wasn't alive during this. But I started talking to some people who were. So here's my theory. That reading this for some folks who lived through the Nixon administration and Kissinger's work would be kind of like if someone like Christopher Hitchens had written the book about the Mueller report many years later, when we would all read it like, okay, I remember when this came out, and I remember when there was all this feeling about cover up, and let's see what he's uncovered. Like, if I had the foundation of having experienced the thing and know like how deep the controversy was, I would be super interested to dig in more to the background of
it. Like there'd be more hooks for you to kind of latch onto that would pull you in.
Because I would have the experiential memory of what he's talking about, which I think I'm lacking in this book.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that makes sense. Like, get a sense from this book just how terrible like his use of power was. And
Kissinger?
Yeah, yeah. And you know, and there's like there's an emotional response to that, but I think you're totally right. If my experience of what was going on during Vietnam, you know, if I was able to experience that on a more personal level, I think that emotional reaction would have been deeper.
I asked a couple people who had some more personal connections to, like, or more like historical connections to these people and events about, like, it's always really cryptic. If you, I would come up to someone and be like, so what do you first think about if I say Henry Kissinger?
And so it's like, are you hitting on me? What's going on here?
Or no, there's a bit of like, I think that most of the reactions I got, I probably asked like 4 or 5 people. It was sort of like, am I being trapped? Like,
where is this going?
Yeah, where is this going? Why are you asking me this? Because it seemed like, I mean, some people were like straight up, he was a shifty guy and yeah. I think he's a bad guy. Some people kind of didn't have much feeling about him. I remember one person said, well, I remember he was really instrumental to us getting connected to China. I was like, okay, yeah. So he would.
So much more positive.
Sort yeah. Yeah. Or at least neutral. Like,
yeah.
He played an important role in political discussions. He was smart. That's what I heard from a lot of people. Like, he was super smart, super connected.
And Hitchens even gives him that. He says, you know, he was a pathological liar with an incredible memory.
He also calls him, like, there was, in the very beginning, I think it's, like, in my copy of the book that I checked out from the library, which was falling apart, by the way. Like, the binding was broken. Does that mean, like, tons of people are reading it?
It could be, or, like, some very angry person was just, you know, pulling on it, like, what the God? Peace prize! Ah!
But it was, like, page 15 or so in that edition that I was reading. Hitchens says, quote, this was what it took to promote Henry Kissinger, to promote him from being a mediocre, opportunistic academic to becoming an international potentate. The signature qualities were there from the inaugural moment. The sycophancy, the duplicity, the power worship, the absence of scruple.
And I think that you linked to an article about the I guess the now just ex national security advisor.
Oh yeah.
And we'll link to it, where the author gives some advice to him, saying like, "Hey, do
be
what
a
Kissinger do." Yeah, yeah. Basically, suck up to the president because it worked for Kissinger.
And that's what I heard from some people also, and read. It might have been in an article about a different book. About Henry Kissinger that was in the LA Times. And they, both these folks that I talked to and this article, were saying that Kissinger established what the role of Secretary of State is now. That, I don't know if that means that he had, that it, the position had less power before.
Yeah, maybe so.
But it seemed like he was the Wizard of Oz. He was behind the curtain. He was given ultimate freedom to do things, and freedom from someone that we now distrust, Nixon.
And I think that's part of Hitchens' argument, is that given that freedom, he decided that how he could best serve the country is by breaking rules of international law. And to Hitchens' mind, and you know, you can agree or disagree with it, that's not okay. You know, there is like a standard of law that America should be. And this goes back to your point about that Bowie, I think, also expressed, you know, that America should be subject to just like any other country.
Right. You can't say you're above the law.
Right. This exceptionalism. And I think to Hitchens, as a, you know, part of his principles was that even Mother Teresa, you don't get to do that. And that's, you know, that's a clear it's definitely clear in this book, you know, for all the difficulties in kind of getting through the factual parts of it. I mean, there is a very clear voice to it and a very clear point of view, which is admirable, you know, that he was able to kind of carry that all the way through the book. And that did sustain me through sort of like the legalese and the stuff where I'm like, oh, I should look this up. Oh, I should know more about this, you know.
So another, like, Bowie's list was so weird. Like,
yeah. I mean,
why did he pick this book? Like, why? We just read, you know, last month, the Knights at the Circus, which was like crazy, flamboyant, and beautiful circus novel. And now, like, whoa, okay, some like heavy hitting. I remember talking to that bookseller at Riff Raff in Providence, Rhode Island, who was saying he used to work at McNally Jackson.
Yeah, I was going to say Rand McNally.
Rand McNally?
The map bookstore. Yeah.
McNally Jackson in New York. And Bowie would come in all the time and buy like biographies and like histories of like war. Like one of those, I like reenactment. Maybe he was a reenactor.
Oh, I mean the costume part, that would make sense. Yeah. Like I'm sure he'd get into like, you know, some really decorative uniforms.
But there's not a ton on the list of like military biographies or political history books, except for this one.
Which lends itself to your in the
line of sight.
The line of sight theory.
What was your new theory? It was the
they're all connected to the bicameral mind.
How does this one connect?
One half of the mind is Nixon, the other half is Kissinger.
Whoa, that's a messed up mind.
Yeah, it's on my wall right over there. The theory is clearly explained with the string and pictures.
The yarn and the pins.
But I think that this does express two sort of themes that have come through other books, like or Bowie's music too. Is like one is the idea of playing a character.
The persona,
mm-hmm. Right? Which is your Kissinger, you're the elder.
Dr. Kissinger.
You're Dr. Kissinger, this funny old guy who seems to know a lot.
Who is apparently like quite a ladies' man.
That's another thing too, which Hitchens takes issue with. The whole Kissinger quote, like, power is the greatest aphrodisiac. He's like, ooh. That wasn't even his line. So there's that sort of idea of falseness and character and mm-hmm. like playing a part. But then there's also like a fascination with power and how power works behind the scenes. And it comes out in music like Diamond Dogs, you know, in that whole album.
Yeah.
And lots of other, you know, songs too. But it also comes out in like Bowie's like coke-fueled fascination with like fascism, you know?
That's right. Yeah.
So I think that
during his like,
was it milk and
milk and cocaine phase.
And red peppers phase.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I just thought maybe he was friends with Hitchy.
It could be too. Like they were probably like, you know, smoking cigarettes together or whatever.
So I mean, they were both kind of born around the same time, right? And in England, they both kind of
like grew up in the '50s and
moved over to the States around the same time. Maybe they were the same person.
Okay, you need to start putting a crazy wall together for that. I think that is like, that's the next season of the podcast, is you trying to figure that out.
That David Bowie was all these other people. It's like the Thomas Pynchon, that author Thomas Pynchon, where they're like, this guy doesn't actually exist. It's just a bunch of authors who are all writing under this pen name. So maybe like David Bowie doesn't exist and it's just all these other people who are performing as David Bowie.
I had a book once that I had a galley for it that I got from like a free pile. That was it was like 200 pages long. It was like a relatively big book. Someone had seen a bunch of letters to the editor to a newspaper in Northern California, and they had proven through their crazy wall of writing that it was Thomas Pynchon. He's like, the language lines up perfectly.
Yeah.
The themes.
The letter to the editor.
Yeah, and it was him complaining about like zoning laws and like.
Well, Thomas Pynchon, if they're out there, is supposedly in Northern California.
That's what we were led to believe.
Oh, so you're saying that Thomas Pynchon is David Bowie?
Yeah, why not? Yeah, let's go with that. Okay, so far...
No. It was David Bowie is Christopher Hitchens. And they are both Brits who moved to America, and they don't believe that America is above the law and that Kissinger should not be above the law.
I think that is the clear takeaway from this book.
Or it was just in his line of sight when someone was asking him what his favorite books
were. You're going to go back to that.
Yeah.
The most logical theory. Well, please write in and tell us how much you disagree with that, or if you agree with that.
The other book that was in his line of sight is the next one we're reading.
Which is?
Dante's Inferno. I mean, how do we go from like the trial of Henry Kissinger to Dante's Inferno? Oh, actually.
Yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense. I think Publomancy strikes again with a very logical segue.
In the middle of my life, I came to a dark wood or something.
And they burnt it down for American power.
Yeah. Deus ex machina. Machina?
Yeah.
Machina?
It means God's in my car. Right? It means Jesus is my co-pilot, I think is what it means.
So close. So close.
Yet so far away.
We'll discuss how far away that is next time.
Yeah. Oh, so what song do we choose?
Well, you chose it.
Oh, yeah.
Because
oh.
I was kind of thinking like, I'm afraid of Americans, maybe. But I think yours is a better choice because it's from the Diamond Dogs album.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites. One I have listened to a ton recently. Candidate from Diamond Dogs. Mm-hmm. I think it's just a slick song.
Yeah.
Just, even if the
for
words,
a slick guy.
Yeah, old Slicky Kissy.
That's going to be burned in my mind.
I'm really sorry.
Slicky Kissy.
And if any of you ever want to listen to this podcast again,
you can find us at thebowiebookclub.com.
And on Twitter at Bowie Book Pod.
Facebook at Bowie Book Club Podcast.
And on the Instagrams at Bowie Book Club.
And you can also find us, of course, on iTunes, where you can rate and review us.
Oh, please, please be gentle. I'm really sorry about that.
Slicky Kissy.
Okay, let's just be done. This isn't going anywhere good.
Tune in next time.
Bye.
Any other kind of day, you'll pretend we're walking home because your future's unsafe. I said there's a lane that even smells like a street. There's a bar at the end where I could meet you and your friend. Someone's scrawled on the wall, that's not a kind of big tree or terrorism. Roadhouse, candles, and other bars.
I used to know this Well, that was a much better impression.
I was dialing it too far.
Yeah, too far.
Okay.
Too far.
Yeah.